Bob Chase joins us by phone tonight to talk about a beautiful book. It is titled Dr. Seuss, The Cat Behind the Hat. It's a wonderful, colorful, informative look in both art and text at Theodore Geisel, better known to most of us as Dr. Seuss. Bob, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm actually a Miami of Ohio grad, so a warm place in my heart for Cincinnati and specifically Oxford.
Yes, glad you had some time here with us. If you would, tell us first of all about how to pronounce Dr. Seuss, because all of us have been mispronouncing it for many years. And then tell us how Theodore Geisel came to be known as Dr. Seuss, if you would, please.
Well, you are pronouncing it correctly, although a lot of people pronounce it Dr. Seuss many times, but you've got it right. And it started back in Prohibition times, actually. His family came over from Germany, and they were a German beer family with the middle name of Seuss. Fast forward a few years when Ted Geisel, who was actually Dr. Seuss's real name, was in college, he and his friends were caught drinking, and it was a very big deal at the time, and he was at risk of losing his position on the school newspaper. And so he couldn't write as Ted Geisel any longer for the school newspaper, so he changed it to Seuss and wrote under that name for a number of years, and then added the doctor later as kind of a nod and a wink to his father, who was always hoping that he would become a doctor. So there you go.
At a time in the 1930s when, believe it or not, his work had been rejected dozens of times, there was a lucky meeting with a Dartmouth friend, and Ted Geisel describes it this way: if I had been going down the other side of Madison Avenue, I'd be in the dry cleaning business today. So tell us what happened on Madison Avenue.
He had been shopping the first manuscript for a children's book around New York for a number of months. I think it might have even been a year. And he had talked to 37 different publishers and had been rejected every single time. And he bumped into this old college buddy of his. And the Dartmouth connection for Seuss is very, very strong. He kept in touch with these guys that he went to college with throughout his entire life. And this chance meeting with his college friend, who had just gotten an associate editor position at Vanguard Publishing, took a look at the book. Seuss had told him that he couldn't get anybody to take a look at it. This friend looked at it and said, hey, I think we can do something with this. They took a chance on him, and the rest is history. You can bet that there's 37 publishers somewhere kicking themselves pretty hard.
Tell us about the actual work that's included in this book.
Sure. I mean, this is really the first time that the general public has ever gotten a look at this entire archive, and it's sort of like cracking the door open on an American treasure. When I first saw this material, it felt like a discovery of epic proportions. Even in the fact that the material in his home was housed in a secret closet behind a bookcase in his home, and you open up the bookcase and it reveals all of these paintings. So what's highlighted in the book are these, exactly that, these midnight paintings. These are paintings that he did over the course of 70 years, where he sort of let himself go. It was a place for him to relax, a place for him to explore. The paintings are iconic Seuss sort of imagery in many respects, but incorporated into these highly sophisticated paintings that really do have their jumping off point as surrealism. Seuss saw the surrealist movement in Europe when it first evolved. He was there in the epicenter. He actually saw one of the very first surrealist exhibitions ever to be held in the world, and it had a profound impact on him. So these paintings are very much of that ilk, but they're fascinating. It's an American treasure revealed in an entirely new way. And this book highlights all of the midnight paintings together with works that he did commercially that folks have never seen before back in the 20s and the 30s. And then, of course, the things that he did for the children's books. And through it all, you can see the connections back and forth between the paintings and the children's books and the commercial work, etc.
He was also known as a great artistic recycler.
He really was an artistic recycler in the sense that in the 20s and 30s, when he was sketching and doodling or doing commercial projects, he kept everything. He would constantly refer back to these early images. So when you look at things in the 20s and 30s, you start to see elephants and birds and creatures that evolved and eventually found their way into the children's books to become Horton or to become Thidwick or to become these characters that are part of our American fabric. But they started as, in many cases, these doodles and things. But because he saved all of this material, he constantly would go back and, as I like to say, sort of recycle them in new ways. and breathe new life into them.
Tell us a little bit about Cat in the Hat and the structure of it, what went into it in terms of the words used and the meter and so forth.
He wanted to kind of turn children's books on their ear, and he liked to say that it's better to look at the world through the wrong end of the telescope. He felt the children's books of the time were very mundane and didn't engage the children and also didn't engage the parents. And he thought if there was a way to bring the two together for everybody to have fun in the process, learning would become that much stickier because people would be having fun as they were doing it. So the Cat in the Hat itself was really the thing that launched him, although he wrote many books before the Cat in the Hat. He started in 37 and the Cat in the Hat didn't come out until 57. But the meter and the cadence of that book struck a chord, and it went on to really develop an entire children's book division. It was the book that launched beginner books for Random House. And as we look further, and to 3 years later, the Green Eggs and Ham book was written on a bet with his publisher that he couldn't write a book with 50 words or less.
This beautiful book was years in the making and obviously was crafted with love and care. How did the project come to you?
I actually sought out the project back in the mid to late 90s. I met Audrey Geisler, who is Dr. Seuss's widow, and proposed a project to her whereby we would take the paintings and sort of give them their due. She had made a promise to Dr. Seuss before he passed away that there would come a time when she would figure out a way to get these paintings and these images into the world. He didn't necessarily want that to happen when he was living. He was a recluse, so he didn't like criticism, and he was afraid of the criticism that may come his way with these paintings and these images, but she wanted to get this out in the world. So I heard that. I approached her and proposed a project that we create a series of gallery exhibitions and museum exhibitions together with a book that would, in fact, do exactly what we're talking about, which is bring this material out into the world. And when you say years in the making, it's literally been years in the making. We've done a tremendous number of gallery exhibitions and museum exhibitions along the way, and this book was sort of the culmination because we've spent a lot of time not only mining the archives of the family, but also there's very few, but at times we find original paintings and drawings and things in private collectors' hands. So we spent years collecting all of that material to put together in this book. So this book is sort of the crowning achievement of all of that work.
Well worth your time. Thank you so much for doing it. Thank you for visiting with us tonight and talking about it. And we'll look forward to seeing you whenever you're in Cincinnati.
Thank you.
Booklist has a starred review that gives a good description of Dr. Seuss, the Cat Behind the Hat. Everyone who grew up entertained, provoked, and enlightened by Dr. Seuss books will love this big, color-saturated volume covering 70 years of published and private art by the master of smart, loopy fun. Spectacular reproductions and excellent, if episodic, commentary map Geisel's exuberant, world-altering artistic journey on what he would call long-wiggled roads into weirdish wild space. I've been talking with Bob Chase about The Cat Behind the Hat, The Art of Dr. Seuss. You'll find more information about this book at WVXU.org. Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.
And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling.
How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags.
And he puzzled and puzzled till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before.
Maybe Christmas,
he thought,
doesn't come from a store.